Hello, everyone. It's time once again for Catalog and Cocktails, presented by Data.World. It's your honest, no BS, non-salesy conversation about enterprise data management with tasty beverages in hand. You can see I'm at this beautiful digital bar here. And we're always excited to chat with you all. I'm Tim Gasper, longtime data nerd, product guy, customer guy at Data.World, joined by Juan Cicada.
Hey, Tim. I'm Juan Cicada, principal scientist and the head of our AI lab here at Data.World. And as always, it is a pleasure. Wednesday, middle of the week, end of the day. Time to take that break and let's go chat about data and have a drink. And today, super excited to have a guest that I love it when we have a guest and they suggest a guest and we can reach out to them and they say yes and we get this super quickly. It's Amy Raiga, who's a senior data solutions manager. Andrew Jones suggested Amy as a guest after our episode we did on data contracts. And here we are. Amy, it's super awesome to have you. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks a lot for having me today. And I wanted to share with you the drink that I made today. Actually, it's a Cosmo Data. So it's something invited by myself. So it's a cosmopolitan, but with a little bit of gin and some other stuff just to make it fun. So if someone is interested, feel free to reach out and I can give you the recipe if you feel funny.
I love how we just jumped into it. And I have to say that out of all the drinks we've had here on the podcast and going to all data conferences and drinks people have, I cannot believe nobody's ever come up with a name called the Cosmo Data. This is awesome.
You see how I'm into the topic, right?
I love it. We should just talk about cocktails today. This could be a special episode.
If we do talk about cocktails, then I know we're somehow going to get into the data anyways, but... So I know Amy here. Amy is from Costa Rica, and I know that's where you're there. So I was like looking to my bar. What do I have from, I don't have anything from Costa Rica, but what do I have from Central America? And I found Flor de Caña, which is a very nice, decent rum from Nicaragua. Mix it with some bitters and a little bit of lime soda. Nice, refreshing, solid drink ready to pick me up right here for my day. So that's what I'm having today. Tim, are you what invisible drink you're having today?
Unfortunately, today I'm having an invisible Moscow Mule with one of my fake copper mugs over here. I'm actually going out to dinner and drinks tonight, so I'm going to have something very delicious in commemoration for this show. But y'all enjoy. Take a sip for me.
All right. Well, cheers. And what do you want to toast for, Amy? What do you want to toast for?
For more data governance.
All right. So we'll get into that. Cheers. So we got our warm-up question today. So today we'll be talking about business goals and strategies. What's a personal goal you have?
Well, actually, I told you a little bit of my background. I was first into tech, data engineering, QA engineering, software engineering. I've been in this business for 15 years. And one of the reasons I moved into the product side, into the management side, is because I wanted to be this bridge and be able to translate things in between business and technical people, because there's always a miscommunication. So my personal goal now is I'm launching my own business where I'm going to provide this kind of consulting, training people. Actually, my idea is also to train the people that you have in your company to be able to do this communication seamless, easily, and based on the experiences and pain points that I had in the past. So now I'm in topmate.io. I'm starting with some coaching, also career changes, which I get a lot because I do free mentorship also in the mentoring club. And my goal is at some point maybe go solo and, you know, keep hiring people to do a little bit more of changes around data in the world, because it's a topic here to stay. And I think we still have a long way to go.
All right. I love that there's many people who are focusing on education, on like helping, mentoring, writing books. So that's awesome. All the best of luck on this change.
And
I'm really excited. Tim, how about you? Any personal goals?
I'll throw one out there. It's to write a book. I would love to write a book at some point. And I know Juan and I have had some ideas on some topics that we could write about. We hear a bunch of good ideas on this show. We've got some ideas of our own. So maybe an honest, no BS data book is on the horizon.
Oh man, I was not thinking about that. There's like another book I want to go write on like knowledge engineering stuff, but that's the one that we have. I mean, people, we have probably 300 pages of notes of every single podcast episode, because everybody knows that we do our takeaways, we write them. So there's a book or multiple books, and we'll style like a cocktail book, a fun book, a serious book.
Yeah.
Like, well, yeah, I'm with you on that. We'll do that. But anyways, let's dive in. Okay, honest, no BS. How important is it to really have the notion of ownership in data.
Actually, that's the pillar. If you want to have real good data and data governance, and also to be able to have data quality. So when you don't have ownership, usually, you know, everybody, it's like the meme of Spider-Man, everybody pointing to each other because everybody blames each other. So the reasoning why ownership is so important is because you can really understand this person should be accountable of this data source, of this dashboard, of this data set, of any asset that you create with data, and make sure this complies with the needs. Or if something is gonna be changed, you know, that needs to be communicated, because what happens usually is, okay, we're gonna drop from the backend system a column, but they don't notify anyone. And then all the dashboard gets broken and there is days and you debug and you don't know what the hell is going on. Because, you know, that has happened to me when I was data engineer, and you don't know what's happening. People is blaming you, all the business, because, hey, my dashboard is broken. Everything is on fire. And ownership provides kind of a wall to avoid these kind of issues. And also the fact that when you change things, for example, data types or other kind of schema changes, and the data quality gets compromised, you're able to, you know, spot them earlier in the game so that things in production doesn't get real impacted.
So one of the things to dive in here, and this is pedantic, and I wonder how pedantic is this, is I think the term ownership is something that people kind of get. So the word ownership is some people get like too strung up on. And I totally agree that we need to have the issue of accountability, and it's not, and there's like so many moving pieces. So is it really the notion of ownership, or is it the notion of who is the owner? Is it really just one person, one department, or like, because I think there's a lot to unpack there. And I think that's what people get annoyed about. It's like, oh, I mean, you, what I mean, you own the data, and they feel like they're hoarding the data and stuff like that. So what are the different types of ownerships or and roles and responsibilities here? Because at the end of the day, I think we agree that we need accountability.
Yeah, I actually created a framework for one of the companies that I worked before, where we decided to go in a smaller scale, meaning, for example, having technical owners, which could be backend engineers that owns an API. And of course, we put data contracts there. That it's that's why I'm connected with Andrew, because we are also very fan of this topic. We have also business owners. And the technical owners could be a data engineer or a backend developer, for example. And then the business owners usually are the BI developers, or let's say data analysts, or could be a business person who is really involved with the data. Because, for example, we have people from monetization teams that they really know how to do SQL or these kind of things, and they know how the business works. And that's when they get accountable for this, because they need to provide, for example, even in metrics, how metrics are calculated, what are the correct formula they need to use. Because me as a data engineer, I can say, okay, maybe I'm going to calculate revenue this way or leads this way, but it's not what the business is thinking about. So we need input from them as well. So when you show them that most of the issues are happening because they are not providing enough requirements or information, and you fix it and they see it, you know, how it's really changing the game for them, they are more willing to own. So I think one of the keys to make them own the data without feeling, oh, it's an obligation, I don't really want to do that, it's another hat I need to wear, and, you know, it's more work for me, is actually trying to find a problem or something that you can solve. And then from there on, you see, if you own this, then you can get what you're looking for. And they are more prone to do it. It's what I told you one the other day. It's like preaching and going and telling, do you accept data governance and ownership of your savior? And if they accept and they are into it, they will be the ones, you know, giving the pamphlets to the others eventually, and more people will come to you.
I love that. You're trying to create this network effect of the value of ownership when you do that. There's some people, though, who are very anti-ownership, and you know, Juan, I think you were talking about the term, and so, you know, some people get worked up around like, well, what's the right way to call about it? There's also some people who are just like, no, ownership is bad, because then people try to hog the data and they try to keep it to themselves and it becomes siloed and things like that. Like, what do you think about that? Are, like, when people say that, are they thinking about it the wrong way in terms of ownership?
totally, because that's not the case. I think it's more about collaboration, because there could be more than one owner for one data set. It could be, for example, let's say a data analyst and a business analyst, right? And they own it together because they need to define goals. But usually you don't define these goals alone. You go to the POs, you go to the business stakeholders, you have a meeting, and then you define how this data is going to be set up for the good usage of it, or for having real insights of that data. So I think this to be siloed is not really. I think, well, at least the way that I see it is that you need to structure this in a way that foster more collaboration, that ownership, like, you know, jealousy, my boyfriend data set that I love it, I don't want to give to anyone, right? It's more about just a kind of collaborative stuff. So I have done many templates. I will be actually selling those on TopMate soon. For example, we do data value proposition. We found at some point, I see one.
Sorry, I have to pause. There's a t-shirt right there. My boyfriend data set that I don't want to give to anyone. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's like this old meme of the crazy girlfriend, remember? With the eyes like, oh, I love this data set. But yeah, the thing is like, I think it's super important that you first evaluate what data is important and not, because then you will have people owning maybe 10 or 15 data sets. But what happens if you actually curate this and you really understand what value is bringing to the company? We had many dashboards with no owners that maybe was used once, and business keep asking for things. So I made them write a template. I mean, I created the template and I'm like, why are you doing this? Who is impacting? Have you seen a dashboard or any other data product that has already this in the past? What is the business goal? What is the refresh rate? And that's how we can start creating data products that are meaningful and usable for many other people. And we can assign it to the right domain or to the right people as an owner. So we deduplicate, we have less data sets, and people is less prone to say, I don't want to own this. And is more collaborative because they need to speak between domains, between business people. So I think that's kind of the key, where the governance actually comes in place to be able to have a better ownership.
Mm-hmm. I want to repeat this because I'm taking notes here. Your template form is, why are we doing this? Who is it impacting? Have you seen something else that already does this? What is the business value? What is the refresh rate?
Uh-huh. Who is using this?
Yeah, this is,
because we want to know which other teams, right? Could be not, for example, let's say sales, let's say, I don't know, logistics. Let's say many teams are seeing this already. Or maybe logistics needs only one metric from that dashboard, but we can reutilize already that metric for a different dashboard for them. So you don't have to redo the whole thing, because at some point you see in some data warehouse, they have multiple metrics with the same name, all of them bill calculated differently, and you don't know which one is the right one. So we foster one single source of truth, let's say that way. So everybody needs to agree in how they are going to calculate this metric, all the teams involved. And after that, well, I have other templates, like the data product value proposition, you know, more also
keep going, share this. I love it.
Yeah, the data product value proposition is more about why are you, like, the design of the product, you know, on technical perspective. So any developer, any data engineer, any BI developer come there and understand what's exactly is going on there. And we show it, we display it in our data catalog, also in Notion. At the beginning, you know, when we were starting, it was more in Notion. Now it's more on the data catalog. And I have another one, which is the metrics library. So if you want to create a metric, we have some other fields. So people think it twice because they have to fill out so many things to always give whatever they need and not doing it twice. So that's kind of a good way to do it. It's like teaching kids.
how do you avoid folks going rogue and doing things without following this process?
It needs to be done. I mean, it's part of the process that we have. Otherwise, the developers won't create a new data product. It's as easy as that. It sounds bad, you know, but that's the only way sometimes to enforce it. It's the same with the data contracts. We have a policy. If you want access to this data set, you need to like and subscribe because we have it in GitHub. So every time there is a change, you will get a pull request. You will need to speak with the data product owner to understand what is changing and how this is going to affect you. Otherwise, they won't care if you're changing something or not. So, you know, you need to be notified. So you need to subscribe to the GitHub data contract. And you need to be able to access this data set. So you can explore it in the data catalog, but until you're sure you need it, you ask for this permission.
So this is interesting. I was going to ask you a question about ownership. We'll come back to that in a second. What do you mean? What is this setup that you have around GitHub data contracts? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. I mean, depending on the type of domain, if you have a stream aligned or consumer aligned, it works like this. So, for example, if there is a backend engineer, there is a contract between the API and, you know, we use PubSub, for example. So, you know, for PubSub to ingest the data, and there are different mechanisms. We check the schema. We check we do a lot of data quality. And we check all the infrastructure and everything that is working. So there are some tests that need to pass in order to do the pull request. Then the data engineer and the data product manager will receive a notification. Okay, there are some changes happening here. And they need and this guy, the guy from the backend, won't be able to push, you know, to production or anywhere. It's just a pull request that they need to approve in order to move forward in the chain, right? But there is a constant communication because the backend engineers understands that this data is being consumed by the data, right? And by the data teams. And then, for example, if you're a consumer of the curated data set, when all this data is ingested and clean and ready to be used, there is another data contract there in between the data producer and the data consumer. And then, you know, if there is some changes created by the data engineer, it's the same thing. There is a pull request, and all the people who resubscribe will be, okay, there is a change that is going to happen. Please approve if this is, you know, good for you or not. We are trying to work now in something a little bit less technical, in the sense for some other people that might not be that technical to understand the data contract, so they can read it, you know, more easily. Because in GitHub, you know, it's not for everyone. So the data catalog that we use, they are putting some things, but also we are thinking in some other software from Agile Lab. I don't know if you're familiar with them as well, but we are seeing how we can make it more accessible for non-technical people, so everybody's more accountable as well.
That's interesting. So you're basically creating these data products. You're representing them in GitHub and using GitHub sort of pull request and change approach to manage notifications, do some automated checks as well up front. And then get approvals before changes to data products happen.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. We had I mean, I remember when we started with all these topics of data mesh and governance and all that, and I was reading more and more and more about data contracts. So I spoke with our data architect. He was not really familiar with the topic at the moment, but then he investigated. We need it in our life. So he went through and he implemented it in this way, which I think it was brilliant because it's totally automated. So we now also check, for example, the usage of a data set, automatic crawling, and if it's not being used, then we drop it because we are also showing to the C-level that we are able to save, you know, also money. So it's connected to a lot of automation in the data platform to make sure, you know, we are optimizing and we get more support from them, right? If you go to the right people like the CFO, then you get someone who is vouching for you, who's going to vouch for the other projects.
All right, let's dive into this issue about, not the issue, this topic about the usage of data. I really like you're saying you keep track of the usage. What does that mean? If I zoom out, I think I love how you're saying you're connecting to the usage, dropping things if it's not being used. I mean, then you're saving money, and then you're kind of showing kind of at the end, finances connecting here. Like, let's unpack this much more about how you're keeping track of usage. What does usage mean? And how are you connecting that to the actual business value? And you can provide evidence that, yeah, keep investing in us.
Yeah, I mean, we had a project last year where we were able to save around 200,000 Swiss francs on our Google Cloud based on doing project cleaning. right? And these was a lot of projects that were created by teams because everybody used to have like access, you know, so access control was something very important that we have to start putting in place. And not only that, we also had a lot of data sets that were maybe duplicated, that were only testing ones that, you know, that just keep going there. We, of course, have deletion policy for certain data sets, depending on GDPR and these kind of things in Europe and the Swiss law. But in general, what we try to see is how often is this data set being used and if it's connected to a metric that is really being used by someone. And this comes because of the reasoning that I told you before. We have several dashboards, some of them never been used or been used just one. And that's why we have these mechanisms of avoiding waste because, you know, at the end, you know, the ESG also things are coming into place now and are really important. So we wanted to really save also and be more sustainable with data. So this is a way to make sure that we are only checking which, I mean, if it's not being used in 1 year, then we go and we ask, okay, what's going on? Do you really need this or not? Can we drop it? And that's how it happened the first cleanup, right? But then the consequent ones is going to be, I think we have it now every quarter that it's been a scanning or something like that, just to see how they are working. And depending on the teams, you know, they will say, okay, we need it or not, because we have different business units and they are free to work in certain way, but we are putting in top, you know, the cloud governance, which is also quite important. To make sure we are complying with all these cost savings, efficiency, and data products mindset.
I'm curious, do you ask people if they're using it or do you just pull the plug and see if they complain? No, actually, I've heard both.
We have done both. Because sometimes they are, yes, we need it. But they never open it. And then you're like, really? Let's see what happened, right? And if they don't complain, we know it wasn't really needed. it's mostly in the old platform before we migrated to the cloud, but yeah.
All right, so for folks who are listening right now, what would you suggest? Should they go ask or should they just pull the plug?
I told you something about the Game of Thrones and the politics, and it's quite, before you get the hate from everyone, my advice is go ask and be nice. Hey, how are you? If you want something from them and you want to gain them and be part of your cult or data cult, go and knock the door, ask them, and they will be, and explain the reasoning behind, right? If you go with a smile, maybe with a cocktail, with a data cosmos, a cosmos data, yeah. And then, you know, you will see if you need to earn the trust of these people, you go and ask. If you know that this is already a bridge that was, you know, burned, I mean, don't waste much time. But be careful always with the Game of Thrones thing because it's a reality. It's happening and you need to, you know, be closer of your enemies, as they say, right? Keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Yes, the art of data war.
Exactly.
No, this is fascinating. I'm still digesting all of this. And, you know, Juan, what are you thinking?
I want to dive into the politics part because you said something really important. I'm like, something I've learned in a somewhat sometimes painful way is politics, right? And I think one of the things mentor of mine has told me, we equate politics as something negative. And politics is not, there is negative bad politics, but politics in the day is how a group of people get together to be able to kind of move towards something that we agree on and make that change. So I think it's really important. Like my initial mindset is saying, you know what, let's just pull the plug and see people complain, but then you're gonna make enemies and you, especially if you're coming in, like you don't want to start that way, right? So you want to like, hey, let me see what you're doing and blah. And so that I think that's a really important, very, very, very important point you made. Now, what other things, let's talk about politics, because I think there's this whole issue about I call it the politics of data, but there's also the politics of knowledge about like, oh, this is what is a customer? Well, there's only a definition of customer. Well, my customer is definition, your customer, my metric definition is better than yours. It's like, how do we manage all that agreement? How do we get to an agreement? How do we get to some consensus? And what happens if we don't? Like, so there's all this politics of data and knowledge. I'm curious if we can unpack that a little bit more, because I know that's something that we were talking about before.
Yeah, I mean, I have a master's degree in digital transformation, and one of my teachers once said, which is true, and I love the analogy, it's like a chess game, right? So you just move the pieces. Sometimes you need to remove some for you to move forward, but then, you know, you keep moving towards the main goal, right? And for me, one of the things is to make people feel comfortable and be friendly and show actually you, I mean, that you really care and you are listening. It's not about only, hi, I'm from the data platform team. This is the new process and you need to follow, because they will immediately say, hey, 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 no, I actually gave a talk in last November. I was getting some questioning at some point at the beginning, like, why do we need data mesh? Why are we doing this? Because we have multiple data platforms. Why this data platform is better? I don't want to use yours, this and this and that. And, you know, this kind of negative or backfire that you get. But when you go there and you listen what kind of problems they have, and you understand how you can contribute to them, you know, a little bit, or tell them, oh, look, I'm interested in what you're doing. I'm doing it this way. Can I see how you do it? Because maybe your way is better and we can introduce it in our processes. And, oh, yeah, sure. And they come like this. Oh, I didn't know you did it this way. Maybe I should try as well. And these kind of dialogues are the ones that brings this politics, this knowledge sharing together. Or, for example, I used to do like this, organize this data conference at my company where we have all data teams. We are around 70 people all together, because it's the only way they will share, you know, and they will say what they were doing in their own business unit, how they were doing it, and fostering this communication in between everyone. People is happy. It's like a, you know, data gathering and all that. So people really feels like the data platform team cares about everybody being integrated and be part of it, instead of, you know, the data platform is here to ruin everything we're doing separately in our teams, and they want to be the boss, right? So I think it's more about teaming up with people instead of just putting them a mandate on what they need to do. Otherwise, you lose them. And reclaim that trust is quite hard, because people will, the team will get bad reputation, and you don't want to do that.
Yeah, these political dynamics are interesting. Do you see sometimes a situation where, you know, you have a really, they could be frustrated or just excited, right? Just, but the passion is high coming from a stakeholder, right, around the data. And are there some cases where actually the owner should be that person? Because they're the one who's so passionate about it, right? Actually, instead of spending so much time negotiating with them, maybe they should be the owner. You know, does that situation happen?
Yeah. I actually have a quite good example. I told it to Juan the other day. Like, we have this team from monetization, and they were the biggest complainer ever, because it was like, oh, I need the leads metric, and we have like five different ones, and this is not really working, and we are giving bad data to our customers, and bad data to finance, and bad data to us, and I don't know what's going on here. And data team is, you know, who to blame, as usual. And at some point, you know, I also work as a data quality engineer for quite some time, so I'm a huge advocate to it. And I was like, okay, let's, we were using DBT, so I'm like, okay, let's use Great Expectations and some other things, you know, to be able to do better testing. But from you guys, I need you to help me with test cases when we do metrics definition, or these meetings that I told you, like to define the formula and how you want the metric to be calculated. I also need tests to see what is the deviation, what is also the intervals that are, you know, proper or not, or what is gonna, or how we can support you to have the numbers the most accurately possible, right? And we were migrating at that time from Microsoft SQL Server to Google Cloud. So it was, we didn't want to do lift and shift, but, you know, because of the time and we were hiring some vendors to help us out, we decided to go kind of lift and shift. We noticed there were a lot of issues there with the calculations and the way the data models were created, and we needed help from them, from the business people, you know, to give actually real quality. So they were, no, why do we need to do this? I don't want it. I think this is a waste of time, blah, 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 blah. At that time, I spoke with my director. He's really supportive. So he escalated with the director of the monetization team, and they had to help. They were like very like, no, I don't want, they were in the meetings, you know, long faces and all that. And then basically, at some point when they were escalated, they had to work with us. And when they got the first results of the metrics with the quality they wanted, with the test cases, with the alerts, when everything went wrong, they were so, so happy, so satisfied that they were the ones coming for the next set of metrics being migrated. Ah, I want this test case. This is not working right now. I provide you here with Excel and the calculations. Please test with this. Please do that. Please this. And they started to own the metrics. And now they are the owners and the business who owns this. It's not even a data analyst anymore. I mean, they built it for them, but they own the entire data. And if there's something wrong, they need to provide the context why is it not working. Because otherwise, how a data analyst, a data engineer, a BI developer will know that the logic is wrong if they know business, but not that deep as them. So that's kind of a, I mean, it was a long process. It's not something, as I always say, digital transformation is something that happens, or data governance transformation. It won't happen in 6 months or 1 year. It takes 2, 3, 4 years, depending on the organization, up to 5 years. And only for doing these metrics and coming to this state, it was probably around 6 to 8 months for a few set of metrics. And then you had to convince other people, other product managers that were brought into data and they didn't want to as well. But, you know, it's not about that they need to know SQL or anything, but at least to understand. I mean, you understand the business. You need a dashboard. That's what you need to do, for example, right? Just provide what context do you need so we can do it better for you. And this is, I mean, sometimes you have to go to the hard way, but once they understand, I told Juan, they are now the biggest fans of this. They were with other monetization teams from the other business units talking about it. And one of the guys came to me and told me, hey, what you did for them, I actually want it for us as well. How did you do it? How can I get this? And I'm like, oh no, we did this and this and that. He was, can you speak to my data team? Because I want the BI manager and everyone to implement the same, because we want the same amount of quality. We want the same harmonization of metrics. We want everything. So you see, they start advocating for you, but the hardest part is to come and get the first door open.
Okay, this is a fantastic story. And what actually, the way I think about this is, you are selling yourself. I mean, you're an entrepreneur. Like, you are telling, you, here's this new thing you want to go do, or you want to change the way people are doing things, and you're trying to get your first, like, your first customer, and you want your customer to advocate for you. And that, that's the story that I'm hearing right now. And then that's a sign of success. And part of that is all the politics. I mean, this politics is just like sales and marketing, and like, well, I do it this way, it's better, but let me understand you. And it's, you have to be very empathetic, understand what you're trying to go do. So I really love this story about this. But I do have to ask, is, we always love to go tell great, cool, positive stories. What's not working? What has not worked? What are the failures that you've seen that we need to learn from?
From this specific case, for example?
No, just in general. Just in general, stuff that you're like, don't do this because I have done this in the past and it does not, and I've always failed with that. I'm curious to dive into that side.
Of course, and it's something that I like always to share, because I've been in many conferences and talks, and they usually say rainbows and cats and unicorns and, you know, like rainbow bright or something like that. And it's not true. It's quite hard. It's demanding. It's tiring. You feel frustrated most of the time. When you see something good that happens, you smile and you feel like you made a lot of progress, which is true. But then the next day is again the same. So, for example, when we started with the data mesh thing, one of the difficult parts, I will say, we did it wrong. I mean, the thing is, it takes a lot to get the right use case. And then, you know, you need to hire people and do a lot of things. But we said, okay, we have an architect and we build up this super cool, shiny data platform. Everybody's going to come to us and say, I want to work on your data platform. Wrong. Like, no, they don't. They are like, I don't need it. I don't want it. Why you want to do this? This is not my thing. I want to continue in Snowflake. I want to continue in AWS. I want to do this and that. We don't care. We don't want to collaborate. And this is something that I learned and I will do different wherever I go, is to start actually with the mentality change from the stakeholders, from the business perspective, from the data team first. Selling that part to the beginning will make and take also them in consideration for the new platform, for the things that are going to be set up for them. It will be much easier than actually put some people to use whatever you build up, even though it could be the coolest, right? But if they don't want, they don't want. They want to feel included in the process. You cannot let them outside of the process, because that it's a big, big, huge mistake. And that's something I learned out of it. Also, I learned that if you, as a data platform team, and people is already resistant because of these issues, the best way to do it is listening, as I told you. Because if you come, hey, look, this is the new process. We're going to put everything on this data catalog. They will be, I don't want to use that. I have a case in one of the places I worked before where we were doing a POC of a data catalog, and we have several options, right? And we were doing POC at the end with two of them, and three of the teams, we decided to go for one. But when we said, okay, let's, and first we said, okay, everybody agrees on this one, because the other team was saying, yeah, we like it. And we were about to sign the contract. They were, actually, we went for the other one. We didn't like that. We already signed the contract 2 weeks ago. Things like that, you know, because everybody has separate budgets and everything. So it's kind of interesting the way politics works, because when they feel pushed to something, they will do the opposite. It's like having teenagers. It's like a teenager. So you cannot do that. You have to talk to them very direct, very polite, very nice. Listen to them first. Tell them, oh, yeah, you're right. Cool, cool, cool. Give your perspective. And then, you know, little by little, it's super difficult. I feel like the mom always, my teammates told me, like, the mom of the team or this and that, because I'm always, like, you know, doing this kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's funny. You can't just be the cool parent. You also have to be the respected parent, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
There's another t-shirt right there. Like, it's like dealing with teenagers.
Yep.
The politics and families and parents, like, there's so much in between here.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's a really good analogy. Maybe to continue that analogy a little bit here, right? So, you know, sometimes you've got a lot of teenagers. You've got a lot of people that you got to interact with. You got all, you know, and you don't know, like, they're combating with each other and things like that, right? And so to turn that into a data situation, right? A lot of times you've got a lot of different stakeholders, different use cases. Like, Amy, as you think about your templates and how your experiences, how do you choose the right use cases to focus on as you're addressing data across your organization?
Yeah, for example, I want to share one more mistake to come to this one, actually, is sure. When we were doing the use case references for data mesh, for example, it took me around maybe 4 to 5 months to find the right use case, because we started bottom up instead of top down, because we wanted to show something valuable to the business, to the C levels, to get the sponsor, because, you know, data mesh includes hiring more people as well, and investing in infra and a lot of things. So I found things with finance, found things with HR, found things with some other logistic teams, found things with customer service, some with one of the business units, because we have, like, central services, you know, and the business units focus on different marketplaces. And we did it in one of the marketplaces. But the thing is, like, the people move so fast. I was not an advocate of this, for example, because I wanted to go more and have workshops, you know, brainstorm sessions with the teams, introduce them what is data mesh, how it works, blah, 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 blah. But the management was kind of rushing in the sense of, I want the data mesh now. I want the first data product release so we can show it, and it's going to be by completely quickly and seamless. It wasn't the case, because you really need to start the data mesh or any data governance initiative by, again, as I said, going to the people first and explaining. And then I changed the rhetoric, and we don't speak anymore about data mesh, but we speak about only data governance or data privacy or cloud governance. And we divide it into packages instead of just a whole buzzword, because everybody's okay, data mesh is a buzzword that is on LinkedIn, that is on Medium, blah, blah, blah. And everybody, as I said, cats, rainbows, happiness, everybody's happy with the domains. It's not true, it's difficult, in a lot of people is resistant out of it. So it's better to start little by little. In the sense of dividing these packages for the use cases. So one of the things that I have learned in my entire career is that you will have to identify, I mean, what how you can bring impact monetary to be able to get the buy-in top down, right? So what we did next in our team was create data apps for revenue and reducing costs. So this project that I told you of cleaning up the projects, saving some money out of it. And who's gonna be, you have to build relationships with the right C-levels. Like let's say CFO, because he likes money. If you save money, he's gonna advocate for you. A CPO or a COO, for example, for HR, we automated some of the dashboards for them where they used to have an intern that manually will go to Excel and transcribe numbers from one system to Excel and then create some things, very prone to errors. And now they get everything via API and it's in Looker, for example. And they were, oh, wow, I love it. This is so easy that we have this intern or these people that were doing this manually to do it, you know, to do something else. And we can have a nice dashboard for the meetings or for the presentations that we have. So now the COO also, you know, it's advocate of it or the head of HR, for example, in this case, because we need to understand the value of process as well. So one of the two keys to get this top-down buy-in is get this revenue part, communicating with the CFO or people who is more into finance, and then also understand the value of these processes and efficiency where they can you know, free up some hours or time or people to do something else where they can produce more and doing as much automation as we can, right? So if you find these allies to bring these things to the board, it's much easier for you to be selling this and to get this executive buy-in or this support from them. So now, for example, we got it after much time working and trying to see how it works, and they are more much happier. But things that you should do before going into this is understand, where are we? Where are you in the organization of terms of resources? If we need to hire more or not, if we can optimize this, and if we are in track to deliver, you know, whatever we can with data, because the data teams are not only delivering governance and these kind of topics, they are delivering products for the business itself, right? So yeah, that's something that I wanted to share as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really important takeaway here, because I think that it is easy to assume that maybe a different approach or that a better approach is like, hey, let's go talk to people at the ground floor, do more of a bottoms up approach. And that certainly is one strategy, right? But another strategy is to really interface with the leaders of the company, understand the strategy of where things are going, and really align to making more money and saving money, right? And between those two things, right, you have to find a way to both have an impact and also tie to the key metrics of the organization if you want to build momentum.
Yeah, that's the, basically the long-hanging fruits. If you find the right project, right, and you say, okay, I'm going to focus on this because it's going to bring savings, and this one is going to bring process-oriented stuff, right, and efficiency, then the next projects, you will have support. You know, it will come here, so you do one, two projects that bring value, then another two that might be improving things for you and your teams, and then another one that brings value, you know, kind of iterative. If you iterate in this, you're always in this momentum, as you said, like they will be, okay.
I'm curious, I'll bring up this comment here from our LinkedIn user, who's actually our loyal listener, Mark Kitson. How do you connect, like, the OKRs, like the business goals, to everything in to all the data work that's happening in your experience? Like, I think this is something that I see all the time, is like the starting bottoms up, the issue why that usually is not succeeding is because from the bottom, they're not really connected to what are the business goals, the objectives of the organization. That's why you want to go start from the top, because they get that and then you can bring down. Like, how in your experience, how are you managing, like, how are you managing the connecting the very specific business goals, OKR and stuff, to the data strategy?
That's a really complicated answer, actually, because, for example, in my organization, we don't have OKRs into the main organization, but more into the business units, and each business unit needs to work on their goals plus working on the data. And that's where I told you, like, the governance comes into a second place in a way, because they need to deliver whatever the business is asking for, right? And that's something that is managed by their but each data team. But in other organizations that I have worked on, usually, for example, if you are, if one of your OKRs is optimizing, you know, resources, or as I said, saving money, you can still attach it to it and show some value and find the right use cases for doing this. Or, for example, if it's more sales, then you can create a data product that will show you which funnels were more successful, for example, and how this can improve the sales in X amount of percentage by the marketing team knowing where to invest more, right? So it's more about understanding the needs and see the opportunity. What can you do with this data that will bring value to them? And hopefully there are some of them that, you know, is gonna take time to see actually value. Like the data governance initiatives, is you're not gonna see a value added until years. And in the meantime, you need to do something that shows something. And basically, if you can go through these through sales, to cost efficiency, to processes, and just deliver little by little, that is attached to the OKRs in general in companies, I think that's the best way where you can show some value while doing what you really want to do to improve the processes for the data teams. Because it's a Game of Thrones, right? It's basically doing things on the side, you know, like Cersei and and move.
That's the theme of this podcast episode. It's a Game of Thrones. Yeah, look, there's so much stuff I want to go through more. We want to hit our lightning round, but there's one topic I wanted to touch before we go to our lightning round. And this is like the honest, no BS rant here that I want you to go do about. We all, you've already touched about this. Like, we all love to talk about the beautiful things, the rainbows and all the unicorns, all that stuff. And we go to these conferences and we hear about this stuff all the time, but there's just so much blah, 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 blah at conferences. Like, yeah, how do we, like, what is the call for, what is your call, your rant and stuff for people presenting at conferences, people at conferences listening to that stuff? Like, how do we deal with all the blah, 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 bullshitty stuff that we're hearing? How are we all more honest, no BS about everything here?
Gosh, I hate it. I was last spring in a Google event about data mesh, and there was this people from one big supermarket in Germany talking about data mesh and this and this and that. And the lady was talking about, oh, and we have these domains and we have, you know, backend engineers and this, and everybody's happy, and we have the catalog and this and discovery and metadata and blah blah blah. And it was, and now it's so seamless and blah, but she's just talking about the final product, if you could say that, right? And then I was with one guy from another company next to me, and we looked to each other, and I'm like, I don't think that could be that easy, because she was talking from a period of 6 months or something. And I'm like, what the hell did she do? I need to know. Like, I need it in my life. How much is it? I buy it. And then the guy and I, right, we finished the thing, and we start to ask questions, and other people as well, because they were also quite, you know, intrigued and how they made it happen that fast. And she was, I don't know, actually this was already there for some years, I just arrived to this company like a year ago. I was like, ah, okay, so what was the pay, I was, what were your pain points, how difficult was it for you, and this and that. And she started to get all these questions, and she got super uncomfortable about it. And I think that's so wrong in so many levels, because when I give speeches in different conferences, I speak about how hard it is you know, to really get buy-ins, to convince people to go and preach, to get the doors closed in front of your face, and you have to go and knock maybe 10 to get one open. I always talk about those things and what works and what doesn't work, because I don't want people to go through the same things I did, and I want to hear from people the same, so I can fix also my own mistakes and try something different and better. And you hear either a sales speech, either my company is the best in the world, we are doing the best data forever. And I mean, for that's why sometimes I get annoying on conferences, because our very little non-technical talks, because the technical usually tends to be better if you have hands-on stuff like that, because, you know, it's just a lot of BS over everywhere. And at the end, you ended up wasting 45 minutes of your time, or maybe an hour, listening to blah, 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 yada, 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 and nothing really that adds value. And I want, when I speak, I want to add value to the people and to learn something and moves to the next level.
So what I'm taking away from this, and this is my interpretation, I'm gonna, if you hear all the rainbows and unicorn stories, like, be freaking skeptical and go talk and figure out what the heck.
Yeah, I'm like, bye, I'm out.
And then actually, I think that the call here is for people giving talks is like, actually don't only talk about the positive things, like talk about the, call it the negative things, because that's how you know how things are real. And that's how you'll connect with everybody.
Yeah, the hard stuff, what sucked, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's why I like to add mentee into my presentations, and I ask, who knows what is data mesh, or who is confused about the topic, for example, and then I get them like, me too, so no worries, I was the same. Or for example, like, who, how long do you think digital transformation takes? 6 months to 1 year, 1 year to 2 to 3. There is a lot of people who think it's maybe 6 months, some people between 3 to 5, and it's like crazy. And then you're like, no, actually it's gonna take a lot. So don't get discouraged if you in 6 months, you don't get any results, because it just might not happen. It might take you years until you see something tangible.
All right, this is a great call. I think it's for people who are sitting at talks going things, like, be obviously very skeptical and go talk to people. And just, I mean, honestly, we got to call people's BS on things. And yeah, if they feel uncomfortable, I mean, at the end of the day, that's how we all learn. I'm like, hopefully the next time somebody's like, well, I'm not going to do that talk again, because I don't want to be called out on that stuff. And then I'll, right? And then also for people who are giving talks, like, let's be real. Let's talk about what's working and what's not working, and let's empathize with each other. So, wow, so many notes and stuff. We got a bunch of great t-shirts we want to go build now.
You have to send me one at least.
Yeah, going back to our original, like, that should be one of our personal goals. Start our t-shirt store.
And maybe, yeah, the geek cocktail.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, the geek cocktails.
And I've been secretly adding more water to mine, so
it's, oh, there you go, balance it out. I really would like to have like a Game of Thrones t-shirt where it's got like maybe the different kingdoms and, you know, like all that kind of stuff. We can work on something. Yeah.
You can put like the cloud and maybe some stakeholders here.
Yeah, and maybe data governance. The, you know, the governance kingdom, and they're scary. No,
the sea levels.
They're like the Iron Kingdom.
Oh please, oh. I truly ask. This is like, I'm going to call him out. One of my buddies, we work together. Stuart Kerver. He's great friends, and he's super funny. I tell him constantly. He would be awesome having like a stand-up comedy stuff like this. I think this is, we're laughing here. I bet more people would laugh at this stuff. Like have a stand-up bit about Game of Thrones. About data and stuff. So, anyways, I digress. Let's go. Honest, no BS lightning round. I'll kick it off first. If you are a bad data owner, should there be negative consequences? Should be reprimanded?
Fired? Yeah, totally. Maybe not fire, but I mean, start with the process. Like, hey, dude, either you fix this or there will be consequences. Like, you know, like I said, sometimes you need to escalate, and that's how they understand.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
No, good.
Yeah.
Around. Love it. That's it. Perfect.
Yeah. And sometimes you need to escalate. That's a great, you know, nobody wants their boss to yell at them, right? All right. Second lightning round question. Should all data have owners, or just the most important data products?
Ooh. I will say everybody. Why? Because it's not only about curated data set that affects our data, it's backend data. And maybe you don't want to have one person, but you should have a team at least. And this team needs to get notifications. So, you know, it's like because, you know, people comes and goes, but if there is a service account with an email, you know, okay, I can, this team, in big companies, for example, you know that this team owns these data sets and you can ask, okay, who's owning this API? And then you can get someone, because otherwise, you know, between a huge company, how would you know who owns that? And it's longer, you know, to get these debugged and fixed. So it's also about efficiency, right? Again.
Yeah. That's actually a good comment you made. What team gets the notifications? You know, that's kind of an interesting question to ask, right? If the tree falls in the forest, you know, somebody should know, right? Who's supposed
exactly.
to know?
Exactly. Yeah, because at some point when I was doing my framework, my boss wanted to have one owner per data set or per project. But, you know, we don't have right now connected all the system from HR with all the people, and we cannot, you know, connect when someone leaves or not. And what happened if Juan leaves the company and then I'm like, oh, I'm going to look for Juan. And he's like inactive for you don't know how many months. How would you know who to go, right? So it's better to have it to a team level. And that's what I decided at the end. I told him, sorry, but I think it's better for on a team level, because then you know who to contact. And someone will know at that point, oh, yeah, now is team the one doing this.
Yeah, I like this is a good comment right now. You can't govern the cake data product unless someone's also governing the flour and the eggs and the butter.
Exactly. That's a good t-shirt as well.
Thank you, Mark. Love it. All right, next question. This is an interesting one. So do we need data product managers, or can we do the data product management and governance happen without them?
No, you need a data product manager, and actually someone who is really willing to learn. I can give you a little anecdote here about the data product managers from backend that were involved as domain owners, and how they were reluctant to do this because they thought they needed to learn Python or SQL or Tableau or something like that. And it's not about that, but they bring actually the order into the chaos, in the sense of, let's organize the backlog, let's see what needs to be done next, what are the requirements. And they are the ones taking these templates that I told you to the business people to fill it out together, to put this order here. They are the one that owns this domain and these data sets as well, some way, somehow, so people can consume. And yes, you can have a data engineer own it, but tell me, if you are a business person, you go to speak to a data engineer, we go to the same thing. It's like speaking Chinese and Taiwanese. I don't know, similar, but they just don't get each other, right?
Right.
So you need this person in the middle. That's why I told you I moved to this, because I wanted to be this translator, because I understand very good the technical side and also the business. As a product manager, you don't need to be super technical, but at least start. I'm actually offering as well some trainings for data product managers that are not into data, so they understand at least the basics. They don't need to be developers, but at least to understand what is a data engineer, because I got these questions. What is a data engineer? What is a data analyst? Is it the same?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, Google it. Yeah. No, I'm joking. No, I was like, no, okay, let's explain it, of course.
You need
to have this patience. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you need to be patient and teach them, and then they will see it. Okay, it's as easy as being a data product, a product owner in a regular software setup. You just need to understand why do you have these people and what they can do for you. But you need them to put this order.
Well stated. All right, final lightning round question. You talked about that very interesting approach around using GitHub for data product, kind of data contracts and the notifications. That's fascinating to me. Do you think that's something that all companies could implement?
I mean, they can actually. I with Andrew, we had this discussion, and with JPG, you know, from also from the data contracts and standards, and they like this approach as well, because it's quite simple. Companies cannot afford, you know, expensive software or stuff like that to have data contracts implemented, or maybe they don't have the technical capabilities to do it. This kind of implementation is easy and seamless, and it's something that works, because one of the things most important for me in a data contract. You can have it on Excel. I have seen that. For me, that's like a horror story. I have seen that in Notion as well. I feel like I'm dying as well. But you need something to enforce it. And what is a simple way to enforce it? A pull request.
I like that. I like the pull request. Yeah. All right. So much stuff. Tim, kick us off. Take us over with takeaways, Tim.
Takeaways. Well, we started off with, you know, honest, no BS. How important is the notion of ownership and data? And you said ownership is the pillar. It's the foundation. If you want to do data governance and data quality, you need to have ownership. And you said, think about that Spider-Man meme where all the Spider-Mans are pointing to each other, right? That's what happens if you don't have clarity around ownership. And you mentioned about some of the templates and the frameworks that you have. You said there's technical ownership and there's business ownership. And a lot of times you need both of those, right? In order to have the right folks that really, you know, who's going to get the notifications, which I think was like a good kind of litmus test to think of that came up a little later in our conversation today. And you had a really great quote, which you said, you know, it's not about silos. Ownership's not a bad thing. You know, it's not like your boyfriend data set that you don't want to give to anyone. It's not a jealousy thing. This is really about collaboration, and ownership creates better collaboration, not worse collaboration. We talked a little bit about contracts, right, and the importance of data contracts in data governance as well as in ownership, and even using things like GitHub as ways to enforce that. Obviously, there's probably a lot of different ways you can enforce data contracts. It's a topic that's come up a lot on our show, but that can be really, really important to create dependability around data products. And we talked about usage of data, right? It's important to keep track of the usage and understand how data is being used by different stakeholders across the organization. And it's going to be something that allows you to really save money and minimize duplicate data and have better lifecycle around data. And as a cue up to the next topic that I think Juan's going to talk about, you talked about the importance of understanding the usage of data and understanding how data products are being leveraged allows you to really create connections across the organization and puts you in a position to build trust. You really need to build that trust before you can go in and start, you know, doing your Game of Thrones games in the overall politics. So Juan, over to you. What are your takeaways?
Oh, so I am super happy we talked about this whole issue, the politics of data and knowledge. And I like how you said, it's like chess. You need to remove pieces so you can move forward. You need to show that you care and that you're listening. So empathy is really part of the whole politics. Don't be the, this is your new process and you need to follow, because that's not going to go work, because people are not going to go follow. They don't like that. You need to understand how you can, you tell people, I want to understand so I can contribute and help, and ask, how are you doing that? Because maybe that's something I can do better too, right? So you really, it's all about gaining trust around this. And also know that the biggest complainer about the data, maybe that's an opportunity, because they should take that ownership, right? And that's politics right there. If it's someone on the business side, often they can also explain better why things aren't working and what's wrong, and they know the business and what's actually and what needs to actually happen. So in the end, then they can actually start advocating for you. So it's that first big win that you want. We should also be talking about the failure stories and things like, hey, I'm going to build that super shiny data architecture and they will come. Wrong. That really doesn't happen. There's a mentality change that needs to occur with the stakeholders and the business stakeholders. Don't just focus on the technology and infrastructure. Start with the people and the process and build that inclusion in that process. And another thing that doesn't work that well is just bottoms up to get to the right use case, right? So that's something that we talked about in the failure stories. So how do we get to that right use cases? Man, you really need to make those right relationship with the C-level. Like, talk to the CFO, understand how do you connect this directly to money. You create apps for revenue, for reducing costs. And where are you in the org with respect to all these resources, so you know if you're on track to deliver what you're promising? At the end of the day, the big thing here is, think about, this is a Game of Thrones. And then just kind of the final comment here about conferences that we talked about. Be careful with all the BS on conferences. You hear those stories that are all those rainbows and unicorn stories. That may be all BS. People who are giving those talks, don't waste people's time. Like, be real about it. And how do you know you're being real? Because you can talk about the hard stuff, about what worked, what didn't work, and how and why it didn't work, and how can you get that work? You really want to empathize with the audience there. Amy, how did we do? Anything we missed?
No. Everything. Thank you so much for having me.
All year. So to wrap us up quickly here, what's your advice? Who should we invite next? And what resources do you follow?
Yeah, actually my advice here is to be patient and to listen. Basically, it's parenting, as I said before. It's basically just listen and try to get into what to understand what the people needs, and then solve the issues that you see as a hanging fruit. Maybe for your next episode, you can invite, well, you know, the hype of AI and everybody needs AI for today. And then now I've been on that boat as well. But actually, you can maybe invite Ignaz Motsiunas. He's also a data product manager. He used to work with me at some point. And he also, it's into this AI topic, so it might be an interesting discussion if you're into this topic. And resources that I follow, well, I follow a lot of influencers on LinkedIn, but I have found already, you know, Medium. I don't do this anymore because that's also a lot of unicorns. But if you're interested, for example, in data mesh, I can recommend you. I'm part of this community, Data Mesh Learning. Actually, they are quite good. I'm part of that group as well. We speak with no filters, and we try to be real with all the topics. I have a monthly roundtable, and next week is the roundtable about data contracts, actually. So it's free for everyone. We talk really open about all the struggles and the stuff every month with different topics. And also, if you follow JPG for data contracts and Andrew Jones, that's a great resource as well. And Dr. Alexander Borek as well, he has also good. Keen Dalmeri for data governance, it's quite good as well. I recommend those because they also speak from all the sides of you know, good, the bad, and the ugly.
I love how you really want to keep it real, keep it honest, no BS. So thank you for that. Amy, this was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much. Just quick, next week, Tim and I are going to be live from Gartner Data Analytics in Orlando. We're actually going to do things a little bit earlier, like at the 10 a.m. on Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern time. I think we're going to go do this, or 11, we'll announce it. We're actually going to have Chris Hades, who's a Senior Director of Data Governance at Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings. So we're going to, that'll be an interesting conversation to know how data governance at all these crews, how they manage the data on cruises on ships and bring that back to land. So that'll be next week. If you're at Gartner, Tim and I will be there. So please reach out to us.
Come find us.
Always love talking to folks who listen to us. And with that, Amy, thank you so much. Thank you. As always, Data World, thank you for letting us do this every Wednesday. And with that, cheers.
Thank you, guys, and cheers. My pleasure.